Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller again on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along with us on this day after Christmas, and we hope if you celebrate the holidays that it's been good to you. Joe Rhodes is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, and you can find more about him at joerhodes.com/WPR. Joe, it's a pleasure to have you here in the studio again.
It's great to be back.
And I hope your holiday was well. You told me that you provided your mother with an upgraded Mac computer.
Yes, my mom got a new Mac. She is now running Leopard, and she is backing up her computer. I bet she doesn't know it, though.
And Leopard backs up automatically? Is that one of the things that
Yes.
is attractive about it?
Yes, this is one of the big key features. And if you've caught my show a couple times, you know I've really been very insistent about people backing up their computers because we put so much important stuff there. Our photos used to be in a shoebox in the cupboard, and we always knew they would be there. Now they're starting to show up on our computers, and you want to make sure you have these things so that 20 years down the road you can look at them. And one of the big highlights of macOS 10.5, what they call Leopard, is it's got a built-in backup system that, true to Apple, it's very easy to use and very easy to set up. It's called Time Machine. And one of the best things is you can go buy these external hard drives. They're very inexpensive. You can pick them up at Best Buy or wherever, and you can plug it in, and the Mac will say, hey, did you want to use this to back up? And you say yes, and you're done. That's it.
Sounds pretty efficient.
It handles the rest all by itself. It's actually, I've had a chance to really dig into the internals of it, and it does it really smart. But not only does it take care of backing up for you, completely automated, but it makes the restore process almost fun. I mean, normally you don't associate fun with backup software. It's just, you know, kind of this arduous thing you have to do. Mm-hmm. But the Apple did this interface for restoring files, and it's very animated, and you hit the Time Machine button, and you see the window that you're looking at. Suddenly you see all kinds of them, and they kind of go back, and you kind of fly backwards with these arrows until you find the file that you want on the date that you want. Very intuitive, very easy to use, very pretty. And it's going to make not only backing up, but restoring very doable for mere mortals.
For people who would like to join the conversation to talk about Mac computers, then give us a call in Madison at 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234, although I know that you also make Apple and Windows work together. So if people have those kinds of problems, why, you're happy to address those as well.
I'll do my best.
And we have a caller online to start, and so let's start with calls, and we'll go to Andrew. Andrew, what's on your mind today there in Mineral Point?
Yeah, my mind is, when I go onto my computer and I go to the iTunes.com, I can't download anything onto my iPod off my dad's computer.
So you've got an iPod,
mm-hmm.
and you've got iTunes, and now let me ask you this. Is your iPod and your iTunes, those are synced up right now?
Yeah.
So when you put new music onto your computer, you're saying it's not showing up on your iPod?
Yeah.
Okay. What you probably need to do is plug your iPod into the computer, and in iTunes, on the left-hand side, you should see a column, and one of those little icons, it should show up, you should see the iPod.
What?
When you plug in your iPod, and you have iTunes open,
yeah.
on the left-hand side, there should be a little icon where you'll see the iPod, and whatever you named your iPod, it'll have that name next to it.
Oh.
Okay. And what you do is you click on that, and there should be a couple of tabs that show up on the right-hand side, one of which will say, I think it's options or syncing or something to that effect, and make sure that you have it set so that it's syncing some or all of your music. Make sure it's set to synchronize, you know, the music that you want to add. For example, my music library is too big to fit onto my iPod. I have an iPhone, and I have way too much music to fit onto it. So what I do instead is I only synchronize certain playlists. So if I want music to show up on my iPod, I have to make sure that I have that playlist set up to synchronize.
Oh.
So you probably have to poke around in those settings. I bet you find that you just need to make sure that you either put that music on a playlist that's synchronizing, or if you've got a big enough iPod, just have it synchronize everything.
Okay.
All right, Andrew. Good luck. Thanks very much for the call. If you'd like to join in, the number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. And, of course, our email address is talk@wpr.org. This just in. Can your guest address domestic travel via train? That's an Amtrak question.
I was going to say,
I think that might have been last hour's.
I think that probably is one that we want to try to address again. Let's go to Bryce in, let's see here, Bryce in Madison. Let's give you a chance. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Say, I have a quick question about a related question to iTunes and making iPods work.
Sure.
If there are two iPods that seek to use the same iTunes application, how do you create two different libraries so one person has their own music so that when they plug in their iPod, it syncs up with their music choices? I know about creating another library by just launching iTunes while holding down the Option key, I believe.
Right.
But I'm unsure of how to make iTunes know that there's two different iPods with two different music selections.
You know, I don't know the answer to this. My first suggestion would be hold down the Option key and create two different libraries.
Okay.
And then what you have to do is make sure that you have iTunes launched with the correct library when you set up one iPod and launch from the other library when you set up the other one. The other option you could do, and this is a little bit more probably a little more severe, but it'll certainly work, is you can create a separate user account. I know Windows XP does this and Mac OS X does this, where you literally log into your Mac as a different user, and then not only do you have a different iTunes library, you have a different Safari bookmarks, you have different mail. It's completely separate from the first user, and that will also accomplish exactly what you want to do. That might actually do a little bit more than what you're actually asking for, but who knows? Maybe that'll be helpful.
All right, Bryce, thanks very much for the call. And let's move next to Laura. And Laura is in Milwaukee. Hi, go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a PC. It's about 2 years old. I'm thinking about upgrading in the next maybe year or two to a laptop. And I have a laptop for work that's a Mac. My parents have Macs, just got them, love them. I'm really confused on whether I should go to the Mac laptop or stay with the PC because I constantly hear about things that are out there, technology toys that are not compatible. And my parents talk about making their Mac compatible with Windows and Mac, but then I'm thinking, does that mean I have to buy an expensive program or a really large, fancy Mac laptop to accommodate both options? Which one is the best option?
Well, let me ask you this, Laura. With your home laptop, what do you hope to do with it? Like, what's the kind of stuff you typically find yourself doing?
I have just a regular PC computer right now, but I do iTunes, a lot of picture storing, I guess emailing,
okay,
typing, and that's kind of about it.
Okay, so you're creating, like, say, Microsoft Word documents, doing some with digital photos, and I kind of got the hint from the way you answered asked the question that you maybe would like to do some things maybe with some devices. I'm guessing iPods and cameras, things like that.
Yep, and I also got a little mini recorder, like a little handheld video recorder for Christmas, and my mom said she didn't get one for herself because it's not compatible to a Mac, and I'm thinking as I'm wanting to upgrade, should I even go to a Mac or stay with the PC?
Sure. It is true that you have to be a little bit more careful if you own a Mac. You have to be a little bit more careful when you're out buying third-party devices to make sure they do support Mac. The nice part is Apple is very, very strong in supporting things like digital cameras, digital video cameras, and, of course, iPods because, well, those come from the same company. They've got kind of spotty support for things like GPS units. I've seen people run into trouble with that. So depending upon exactly which devices you're hoping to play with, I mean, most video cameras you can just plug into a Mac and they'll work. So here's what I would suggest is really you kind of play around with one. You know, go into Apple Store and see what you think about it and talk to an Apple expert. It really helps if you know what kind of stuff you want to use with it. Now, most of the stuff that you've just described, an Apple computer will do really, really well for you. And one of the nice things that I like about Apple computers, this is why I keep my mom on Apple computers, is she's doing a lot of that kind of stuff, and I don't have to worry about her getting as many viruses or spyware or just general craziness that seems to show up on Windows. Because it's just kind of hard to explain to someone, you know, well, why did this error come up? Well, you went to the wrong web page and it did something for you. So on that side of the equation, you actually, I think, and this is my personal opinion, I'm sure someone will disagree with me, but my personal opinion is you gain a lot on that side of things because it's actually easier to use and not as bizarrely frustrating. But the flip side of that is you do have to pay a little bit more attention when you're buying, say, a video camera or a digital camera. But like I said, especially with still cameras and a lot of the digital cameras, you can just plug them in and they'll just automatically work. Now, the nice thing about Apple laptop or all Apple machines, when you buy them, you're going to get a suite of programs that's going to do a lot of the things that you just talked about. They have their iPhoto program, which I think is just a brilliant way of dealing with a lot of digital photos, and you can do some really cool things with that. They include iMovie, which lets you plug in a digital camera and really make some professional-looking movies with the footage that you have. So, you know, those two programs right there, they also have a program called iDVD, which lets you burn these to a DVD that you can play on any standard DVD player, complete with chapter markers and menus and the whole bit. So Apple includes a lot of the software that's actually really quite good that does a lot of this stuff. It lets you take these things, once you find devices that are compatible, it lets you take them and really run with them and do some really spectacular things with them. So you asked an Apple guy, and of course you're going to get an Apple answer.
I see. Can I ask you one more question?
What would that be?
Can I ask you, what percentage of technology tools and fun things out there really are compatible with both? My mom, who now has a Mac laptop for her job, she is still finding things regularly, it sounds, that are not compatible.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I can give you an actual percentage. I'm assuming, again, that you're talking about hardware devices. There's just millions of devices out there, and a lot of the bigger manufacturers, especially like the major corporations, the people like Sony and JVC and Canon, they're making devices that are cross-platform. Sometimes when you get into more high-end or more specialized devices, then you get into one that either supports one or the other. So I can't really give you a great percentage, a great percentage shot on that one.
Laura, thank you very much for the call, and good luck to you. Understand, Joe, that it's quite possible that around February or March, Apple will introduce a new laptop computer.
Well, you know, there's a lot of speculation about this, and Apple is notoriously tight-lipped about what's coming down the pike. Macworld comes up right around my birthday in January, which is, you know, what better birthday celebration than that? And the rumor mills are just screaming. And one of the consistent rumors is that Apple might introduce a subcompact laptop. Right now, the lightest Apple laptop is about 5 pounds. And that's either the 15-inch MacBook Pro or the MacBook, which is the smaller, either the white or the black one. They're great machines, but some people think 5 pounds is too much. So a lot of people are hoping, and there's some rumors flying around, that Apple is going to introduce something that's really small, really thin, maybe integrate some of the iPhone touchscreen features. We're not sure. Some of the rumors say it might not even have a hard drive. They're just going to use flash memory, which would allow them to make it, you know, just razor thin. Nobody knows except Steve Jobs and a couple of engineers what's going to show up. But expectations are fairly high that they're going to introduce some kind of new laptop and it's part of, you know, being a fun. It's part of the fun about being an Apple Watcher is you get to be surprised that day of, you know, what is it going to be, and hopefully it'll be something really cool.
Joe Rhodes is a self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison, and if you'd like to talk with him and ask a question, make a comment, then join us in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network, and very happy to have you with us on this Wednesday morning as we talk about Apple computers and accessories with Joe Rhodes. In about 20 minutes, we'll be talking about rail safety issues in Wisconsin with Rodney Cronin, the state's commissioner of rails. But right now, we're going back to the phones to Todd in Sussex. Hello, Todd. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call this morning. We run a Mac, and our youngest daughter plays on the Webkinz website.
Okay.
Where you buy the little stuffed dolls, and you can register them. It loaded, I don't know, she played with it for months. In the past few weeks, it will say it's loading, and it will not completely load.
Hmm. Let me ask you this. Do you know what version of Mac OS X you're using?
I don't. It was just 1 year old this year. So
okay. So it's, sure, probably Mac OS 10.4. I can't say exactly. I've had a couple of questions about that website lately, and I'm wondering if maybe they're doing some work on that. One option you could do, just some general maintenance, if you're using Apple's built-in Safari web browser,
yes.
Under the Safari menu, they have a option that says empty cache.
We did that.
Okay, that was my first thought. My second thought, have you tried downloading the Firefox browser and see if you have better luck with that browser?
No, we haven't. That would be your recommendation?
Yeah, I would give that a try because it's one of two things. Either it's you know, they're not compatible with Mac or they're just not compatible with Safari. And every once in a while, you run into a website that just works better in one browser than the other. So it's always good to have both, and Firefox is free.
Okay.
So what I would do is you can go to getfirefox.com.
Okay.
and download it for free. It's very easy to install. And see if the website works any better in that browser. And if it does, that might be the answer. I typically have both web browsers open. I spend probably 95% of my time in Safari. But every once in a while, you just run into a web page that just works better in the other.
Okay, so getfirefox.com.
Correct.
Exactly.
All right, thanks much.
Todd, thank you very much for the call. And that means line is open for you. In Madison, the number is 263-1890. Or it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Mike next in Pine River. And Mike, what's on your mind?
I've got a question about support for Leopard. Like usual, they don't come with manuals, but they did come with a CD
mm-hmm.
that I'm still puzzling over. And I'm wondering whether your guests can recommend a good hardcover book, manual, or whatnot, because some of the things on Leopard aren't intuitive.
I can't because I haven't read any of these yet. Typically, what I do when I'm looking to pick up a new technology, whatever it is, whether it be an operating system or a programming language, I tend to go to a bookstore and I just start opening up the books and I kind of read the table of contents and I'll pick a random chapter and start reading it. Some books will, just by the nature of how we are and how writers write, some books will just speak to you better than others.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing to do is really go to a bookstore and just see which one looks like it's written for something that you can really hear the author talking to you and you can really understand what they're saying.
Are there several out for Leopard now?
I'm assuming there are. Honestly, I haven't been to a bookstore all month because I've been...
I've not seen very many on Amazon, for example.
Yeah, yeah. I'm guessing that there are, but honestly, I just haven't had a chance to go look.
One other question, if I may. I've noticed that several of the applications I use are not yet supported. Is there a place you can go to find out what applications are supported or are not supported yet with Leopard?
Your best bet is to go to I don't think there's one central clearinghouse for this kind of information that I found. But generally speaking, if you go to each manufacturer's website, I actually haven't run into too many applications that aren't working properly. A lot of them, they don't specifically say they work in Leopard, but they work fine. I know Adobe is not officially supporting CS3 on Leopard, even though, you know, every experience I've had, it's been fine. I think there's a few minor details that maybe have a little bizarre quirk or something like that.
That was the problem I had. The Adobe Acrobat 7 is not supported.
Yep.
And you don't know that until you go to their website.
Yeah. That's the one application that I've actually have run into that has a couple of quirks. And it still works. It just does. You don't get the smooth workflow where you can print from Quark Express and go right to a PDF. You have to save it as a PostScript file and then run it through Distiller.
Exactly.
But they're saying that they're going to have an update for that.
In about 4 months, they said.
4 months? Oh, I thought it was in February.
Oh, well, hopefully.
I thought I heard February, like late February was their target date for that. So
yeah, that'd be great. Well, thanks a lot. You answered the question.
All right, Mike, thank you very much for your inquiry.
If I can add one quick thing there.
Absolutely, Joe.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Leopard before you start jumping into it,
mm-hmm.
if you go to Apple's website, they do have a couple of Getting Started videos, which will kind of take you through some of the new features, kind of show you how some of the stuff works. Apple's actually got some, they call them guided tours. And they're actually kind of handy. They load pretty quick if you've got a broadband connection. And if you kind of want to see what it's about before you start, you know, putting the CD in your drive, that's a good way to get a feel for it.
Let's go to Scott next in Duluth. And Scott, what's on your mind today?
Good morning.
Hey, Scott.
I'm a Mac fanatic. I've only ever had Macs, but the only thing I can't figure out is my iPhoto libraries.
Mm-hmm.
I have a digital camera, like everyone. And as I've exceeded my computer's hard drive space, I've backed stuff up onto several other hard drives. And what is a good way to be able to go look at those? And it just seems like the libraries get all messed up.
Yeah, iPhoto actually will do a similar thing to what iTunes does. When you're launching iPhoto, if you hold on the Option key, you can create new and separate iPhoto libraries. And then what you can do is you hold on the Option key and launch iPhoto, and let's say you had one for, say, 2000 to 2002, and then another one from 2003 to 2004. You could hold on the Option key and select the one, and you can put these libraries on external hard drives if you need to. So you can hold on the Option key and just, and that's what some people are doing because their iPhoto libraries are just getting so big they don't fit in one spot.
Oh.
So that's probably the easiest solution to that. Yeah, digital photos are tough because they grow and accumulate, and they really get, you know, that's one of the big pushers of these new big hard drives is digital cameras.
All right. Well, that'll make my life a lot easier.
All okay. right, Scott. Glad to help. And let's go to Jim, see what advice we can give there in Milwaukee. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I've got a new iMac, 24-inch, and I'm running Leopard.
Okay.
I tried to, well, what I did was I went out and got a FireWire external hard drive, and I formatted it with GUID so it'd be a, it could be used as a startup drive.
Sure.
I installed Leopard, and then that worked fine, and I go to my system preferences to make that a my startup drive. I select it, I go to restart, and no matter what I do, it just keeps rebooting from my internal hard drive.
Hmm.
So I don't know what to do.
Yeah, My first thought is, you said you you did definitely format it, or actually partition it.
I did a single partition using GUID.
Yeah, and that's, boy, that's the right thing to do. And then you installed Leopard onto that external hard drive as well.
Exactly.
Boy, I'm not sure, because those are two things that should make it work.
Yeah, and it's allowing me to select it as a startup disk, and then I restart, and no matter how many times I do it, it just keeps coming back and booting from the internal drive.
Sure.
So I got confused.
Here's one thing you can try and just see at the very basic hardware level. See what your Apple sees when you turn on the computer from a cold start. Hold down the Option key. Boy, this Option key is really recurring.
It's busy.
It's a recurring theme today. Hold down the Option key, and when the computer starts up, it will essentially give you all your options from which your computer can start. And if it recognizes that external drive as a valid startup drive, it will show up as an icon. And if all you see is your internal drive, that tells you that the hardware, for whatever reason, doesn't like that drive as a startup volume.
Okay.
And if that's the case, what I would try is maybe go back in there and try partitioning it again. Not just erasing it, but actually partitioning it.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's what I had to do in order to select GUID.
Yeah. And try reinstalling macOS 10.5 on that partition again and see if you have any better luck. Because it sounds like, my hunch is that when you hold down the Option key, it's only going to show your internal drive, and it's going to say, hey, I don't know what that drive is.
Got it.
And it sounds like maybe something didn't quite go right with the formatting or something like that.
Well, okay. That's a tough one.
All right, Jim. Thank you. Thanks for the call. The number in Madison for you to join in is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Your website, Joe, is joerodes.com, correct?
Yeah. And then if you go right at the top, there should be a link for WPR, where I have a blog going where I talk about different things to talk about on the air, or questions that people email me. And it's if something's common enough that I want to make sure people get it, I'll put it up on the website. You know, sometimes I talk about things on the air, and it's a little hard because you can't see my arms moving while I'm talking. So I try to talk about things in a little bit more detail on my blog and post pictures. So you can kind of see what I was talking about when I say, okay, click on this. You can kind of see what it was I was talking about exactly.
And so today's show will be up there in a reasonable length of time,
couple days
maybe?
Well, usually I devote all of today to answering emails, because I usually get a whole bunch of emails in my inbox after I've been on the air, which is it's a lot of fun. And I love the fact that people get in contact with me.
Excellent.
And I do my best to answer those. So I usually devote the entire day just to responding to those and putting things up on the blog. So
let's go next to Richard in Black River Falls. Hello, Richard. What can we do for you?
Okay, I got a question. I have some old 8mm film. Does Apple have a program in which we can, or a device, which I can run these and then burn them on a CD or a DVD?
You know, I just got this question not too long ago from one of my clients. Apple doesn't, but there are places that will do this. And I did a Google search for it, and there is a place in Madison, and Richard, I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the place. I don't know if you are calling from the Madison area or not. What I would do is take a look in your phone book and call up some of the local film developing stores and see if they offer this as a service. Because what you basically need to do, otherwise if you Google this, you can search for this kind of term. You're looking for analog film to digital conversion. So you want to get this converted to digital.
Yeah, I have a bunch of old films when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people have this.
And so forth. The old 8mm and the Super 8. I think I even got some 16mm. And I'd like to get them because you can't show them anymore.
Right.
Because they'll burn like crazy.
Yeah. And the great news is, the research I did, it's not outrageously expensive. It's not terrible. It's not free, but it's not terrible. So you can take this to a place, and they'll convert it to – what they do is they convert it, I think, to what's called DV, or digital video. It's kind of a raw digital video format. Once you have it there, you can bring it into your Mac. You can edit it in iMovie. You can, you know, clip out all the parts that aren't very interested and put all the highlights in there. And then you can burn it to a DVD, which you can play very easily.
But, thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Good luck to you, Richard. And I would imagine that there's somebody in Black River Falls that's doing that kind of work.
I would certainly think so. A lot of the, like I said, a lot of the film places, because film cameras are kind of falling from grace, they're finding other things to do with that kind of technology. And one of them is to convert this old film into digital format.
Jim Packard with Joe Rhodes as we talk today about Apple computers and accessories. Judith is next in Milwaukee. Hi, Judith.
Hi. I'm hoping your guest might have a recommendation for free word processing software that I can download. I have a Mac desktop with it's OS 10.4.11, and it only came loaded with text edit. It didn't come with anything else. And during the first couple of months, I've had it now for about four months. During the first couple of months, I did the 30-day trial on Pages,
mm-hmm.
and on whatever the Word.
Microsoft Word.
Microsoft Word,
yeah.
Was that I downloaded for a 30-day trial. I'd prefer not to buy either one of those. They're really more than I can use in terms of everything that they come with. I really need something simpler, but a step up from text edit.
Sure. Judith, let me ask you this. Do you have pretty good access to the Internet?
Yes.
Okay. One option that's free, and I'm not recommending this, I just know it's out there. I haven't actually used it. I have to confess, I'm a big Pages user. But then I also write, 70-page manuals with pictures and all kinds of stuff, so I need something fairly involved.
Mm-hmm.
But Google has a suite of applications, and one of those is called Google Docs. And it's basically I'm going to call it a Microsoft Word Lite, but it runs in your web browser. And it has formatting, it has all that stuff, and you store all of these things on Google servers, so you don't have to worry about backing anything up. I actually haven't used it, so I don't know how good it works, but Google typically has a pretty good track record with making this kind of stuff, so you might want to try that. That's free. Another option, and this is a little bit more of a power users kind of thing, but there is a program called openoffice.org, and that's also their webpage, openoffice.org. And you can download, it's provided by Sun Microsystems, and they make a Microsoft Office suite that is open source and free. And they have a version of that runs on Apple. Now, here's the thing why I say it's a little bit more of a power users thing. It's not completely integrated with Mac OS X. It needs a thing called X11. Okay. And if it's not already installed on your computer, you can go to your installation disk, your 10.4 installation disk, and I think it's under optional installs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you fire it up, you can kind of tell that it's not really an Apple application because it doesn't look quite the same, and you might have to
a little bit of a learning curve,
especially when you get into things like when you want to print.
Mm.
It doesn't use Apple's print box. But if you can get the hang of it, that's free, and that's actually very powerful. It's very similar, I'm going to say, to Word 2000 or about that era. It's got a lot of features. It's very, it comes with a spreadsheet and a presentation program and things like that. But otherwise, like you said, you've tried Pages. I don't know what you thought about it, but that's that whole suite is $79, which in the grand scheme of software is not too bad.
No.
But like you said, it does have a lot of bells and whistles that maybe if you're not using.
Right, and I can't remember now what the names were of some of the stuff that I sort of saw that was around there when I, Googled for free
word
processing for Mac, and it was just kind of overwhelming. I thought maybe, if you could point me in some direction. But I'll check out Google Docs and OpenOffice.
Yeah, there's a ton of options out there, and they'll be anywhere from, $25 to free.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, the free ones are usually okay, but they have some of the features stripped out of it. There's a text editor called BB Edit, but I think that's more for, processing raw text files, not really doing any kind of word processing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Judith, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And Sean is next in Oshkosh. Hi, Sean.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Very good.
Hi, Sean.
Hello. Good morning. My question today is this. I'm a huge Mac enthusiast, and I just bought a new MacBook. It's working swimmingly.
Excellent.
And I just recently got a brand new flip video camera from Pure Digital Technologies, and I'm not sure if you have any experience with that. but I can't get the AVI files to import into my iMovie, and I was wondering if you had any experience or advice in that arena.
Well, actually, I don't have particular experience with that camera. However, I do know that AVI files oftentimes cause Macintosh users trouble. Because AVI, it sounds like it'd be a very simple, standard thing, but there's actually a number of different kinds of AVI files.
Okay.
And your best bet, and I'm gonna turn you back over to Google here, because that seems to be my answer for everything, is if you Google for, you're looking for a QuickTime plugin that will allow QuickTime to read these AVI files. What you want to be able to do ultimately is be able to open them up in QuickTime. Once you can do that, you can convert them into something that iMovie will be able to understand.
Okay.
There's programs out there. There's one off the top of my head, I think it's called Handbrake, that is useful for converting video from one format to another. But you basically want to, you're looking, I think, for a plugin for QuickTime that will allow QuickTime to work with that AVI file. And you might have to do a little poking around and a little researching to find that.
And are there any particular cameras that you would recommend that work well with iMovie? Just they're user-friendly, ready to go.
You know, I can't say that I do, just because I don't do much video work. I wish I did. It's kind of a black hole in my knowledge spectrum. I just there's nothing there.
Well, I really appreciate your help, and this flip video camera is fantastic.
Cool.
I could just get it working with my MacBook, I would really be off and running. It's a great little camera.
I'm sure there's a way to get those to convert.
Sean, thanks very much. We appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Seth in Deerfield next. Hi, Seth.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I have a few questions on the MacBook Pro.
Okay.
First off, I'm going to be going to college next year for computer science, and I was wondering what would be some good basic stats for a laptop.
Sure. Are you asking for, like, if you buy a laptop, what should it have, basic hardware kind of stuff?
Yeah, like memory, hard drive size, some...
Sure. Well, all the Apple laptops are going to ship with a gigabyte of RAM. In my humble opinion, I would have no less than two.
Okay.
If you're going to be running into Windows programs that you're going to need to even run, and I'm going to go a little bit heavier for you because you said you're going to be a computer science major. If you're going to be doing a lot of compiling, or if you're going to need to run Windows as a virtual machine or something like that, or even Unix or Linux as a virtual machine, because a lot of computer science programs are taught on Linux, you'll probably want to upgrade that to the maximum, which is four these days. You know, memory just isn't that expensive. I don't know that I would buy Apple's memory, because their memory is really expensive.
Okay.
I would probably, and this is what I do, I buy Apple laptop from Apple with the minimum memory, and then I go to a third party and I just, you know.
Upgrade it yourself?
Yeah, and it still ends up being less expensive, even though I'm throwing away Apple's memory. So I would definitely do that. And the other thing I run into, I mean, I don't know how much, for me, the big space consumer on my hard drive is music and lately Stargate episodes. But I, especially with laptops, get the biggest hard drive you can, because they seem to fill up so fast. Hard drives and laptops just haven't kept pace with desktop hard drives.
Okay.
And so I think the biggest hard drive you can get right now is 200 or 250 gigs in an Apple laptop.
All right.
And, you know, that fills up faster than you think. So, mm-hmm. And it's nice not to have to push everything off to an external hard drive. It's just one more step that you have to work with. So I would get, you know, especially considering you're, sounds like you're a real power user, if you can afford it, get the extra RAM and the extra hard drive, more so than extra processor.
Okay.
All right, Seth, good luck to you. Thanks very much. Email from Paul says, what are some important features to have in an external hard drive that you would use for automatic backups? My internal hard drive is 250 gigs.
Well, the trick there, if you want to use this for a backup, is make sure that it's 250 gigs or bigger. Otherwise, you have to, you know, play a little shell game with your backups, which is no fun. As far as features go, I kind of usually look at, you know, what's the hard drives. They're very, very similar these days. For working with an Apple computer, if you can find a hard drive that has a FireWire interface on it, it will be a little bit faster and a little bit more universal than USB hard drives. Just because older Macs support only the slower version of USB, but all Macs support FireWire, which is really nice. And if you've got a newer Mac and you can find a FireWire 800 drive, those will be even faster yet. But otherwise, pretty much, you know, look at the warranty and look at the price, and that's what you're looking for.
Seth, thank you again very much for your call. And Deanna, let's give you a chance in Eau Claire. Hi, go ahead.
Hi. I got a iPod Nano last year.
Oh, cool.
And I had no problem setting it up and, you know, putting the music on my Nano that I wanted. I'm a PC user, but it had no problems whatsoever. It had been a long time since I had synced my iPod to the computer
okay.
to load more music onto it, and I discovered that it no longer recognizes, the computer no longer recognizes my iPod. And I've looked at whether it's my connection. I've tried a different, you know, actual USB connector cord, and
sure.
I don't know if it's my computer. My computer is pretty ancient, but I have heard that this can be quite common. I went on the iPod website, but it didn't really suggest any solutions.
Okay, and you said you're syncing it with a PC with iTunes, right?
Yes.
Okay. First thing I would try, make sure that you have the most recent version of iTunes. I think they're up to version 7.5 right now. And that's, you know, a free download, so that's, it certainly isn't going to hurt to give that a try. The other thing you can try is let's isolate it and see if it is your iPod, or we'll see if it's your computer. If you have the opportunity, try plugging in your iPod to anyone else's computer and just see if it shows up. You don't necessarily have to synchronize it, but just it should show up in the left-hand side column of iTunes on their computer. So if it does show up on their computer and doesn't show up in yours, then you have a hint that, okay, this is something going on with my computer. If it does or doesn't show up in the other computer, then you have a hint that, okay, there's something going on with my iPod. I don't know exactly how this is done on the iPod Nano, but there is a way where you can forcibly reset the iPod. You have to hold on a certain set of keys, and that basically tells it to turn, you know, forcibly turn off and turn back on. That might get you a little something. If not, if it is the iPod, your best bet is to take it into an Apple store and see if they can diagnose it for sure and see if there's something wrong with the iPod itself or if it's just the cable or connector.
Okay, I think that'll be very helpful. My first try will be the iTunes version because I know I don't have the most recent version. So.
Yeah, I would try that first and just see that, you know, that right there might actually help you out some.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right,
very,
Deanna.
Very helpful.
Thanks very much. We appreciate your call. Our guest, Joe Rhodes, self-employed Macintosh support specialist in Madison. He's been supporting Macs professionally since 1999 and unprofessionally for several years before that. You'll find it more about him at joerhodes, rhodes.com. And if people have questions that we weren't able to get to today, since today is your day to answer emails.
Today's my day.
And I'll forward anything that comes in to you on my email account as well.
Sounds good.
Joe Rhodes, we'll have him back as he talks about Apple computers and accessories. And maybe the next time he will have some new information about a possible new Apple laptop, that sub-laptop that we've been hearing about. And will you be making a visit to Macworld then as well?
I'm not going to be making it to Macworld this year, unfortunately. I've just got too many things scheduled. So I'll be watching it online instead.
All right. Thanks a lot, Joe. If you'd like a CD of the program and the one to follow, it's available from the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. You'd be asking for programs 1226. I'm Jim Packard. Our thanks to Keisha Mabra for on-air production today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.